That's actually, wow. That's actually quite useful because I've got a nice white picture now on the screen to light you folks all up. I always take a picture of my audience at the beginning of the presentation while they're still smiling. That was a joke, by the way. There are others. See if you can spot them. So all look happy. I'll try one more time. This time I'll focus it, okay? Or maybe not. Go on. You get these fancy cameras and they've got too many buttons on. Right, okay, look happy. Close enough. Okay, robmiles.com is where the pictures will appear. There's lots of other stuff up there as well. If you're expecting Ben Rieger, then I do apologize. I fly from a little airport in the north of England called Humberside Airport, and it's very, very, very small. And you ring them up and you say, what time does the plane leave? And they say, what time can you get here, Mr. Miles? It's kind of cute. I rocked up yesterday morning to catch my flight to Schiphol, and they said, oh, the plane's not working today. That was that. So that meant I had to travel today, arrived a bit later, and Ben, bless his cotton socks. Do you say bless his cotton socks in Belgium? Maybe not. Anyway, it's a nice thing. If you bless someone's cotton socks, it means you like them. he stood in manfully, did a great job, and thank you very much for that. So what you've got from me, before I start this presentation, it's really hard to see the audience, which might actually might be a good thing. Sorry. Rule number one, don't upset the audience right at the start. Wait for that to emerge later. I'll do a quick straw poll first. How many folk here are developing for Windows Phone? Okay, that's a few. How many folk here are writing XNA? Okay, right. Okay, so that's fine. I've got 75 slides, okay, which we're going to go through in an hour and a half, but it'll seem much, much, much longer. yeah, these are the jokes. I have others, but maybe not. What I'm going to give you, I mean, the name of the game really was, I thought I'll try and build a game from scratch in 75 minutes, and I've come to the conclusion this probably isn't possible. And if I did it, it wouldn't actually deliver a particularly useful experience for you folks, because what I want you to take away from this is an understanding of just how easy it is to get started writing stuff for the platform and just how much fun you can have doing it. I like to think that everybody in this room is here because we kind of like writing code and making stuff. And I code for fun. I buy video games, but I don't play them. I mess around with code, seeing what I can make it do. And when I've made something which seems a bit silly, I ship it. I lob it into marketplace and see what other people think of it. And it's kind of like a hobby. It's also what I would call building the brand, which means that if I go for interviews for jobs and what have you, then I've got something to sort of show off. My day job is the University of Hull in the UK, the best university in the world. I teach computer science to first-year students, we do programming in C#, and we set games as programming exercises and stuff. And I tell them that as a student, you should be building your brand. You should be making yourself interesting potential employees through your life. And putting things in marketplace fits in that kind of category for me. So if we have a mix of a few XNA people, a few Windows Phone people, and the rest of you just here for the jokes, well, good luck with that, we're all going to get along absolutely fine. What we're going to get from me is an overview of XNA very quickly. Wow, geez, that's big, isn't it? What a project. Anyway, yeah. How to get an idea, make a game, make it ready for the market, and then publish it. And there's a few useful resources at the end. I'm going to take you through the life cycle. If we can get it in the marketplace by the end, that's nice. I've kind of cheated because I've played around with a few ideas beforehand just to make it a bit easier on myself. So before we go any further, quick overview of XNA. Anybody here know what XNA stands for? Audience participation, love it to death. XNA apparently doesn't stand for anything. If it stands for anything, it's XNA is not an acronym, which is one of these sort of pseudo-witty things. That's what a computer scientist tells me he thinks is being funny, and then the real world kicks in and tells him he's not. Windows Phone, there are two ways you can write apps for the platform. as Silverlight, which is great for line of business apps and very simple games with no more than up to about 10 sprites on the screen at any given time. And there's also XNA. And they sit on top of the phone, and when you make a project, you effectively target one of those two platforms. It is possible to combine them. What you find is that Silverlight's great for user interfaces, buttons, text boxes, all that kind of good stuff, whereas XNA is great for drawing things real fast, lots of them, with transparency and other things as well. And so you can actually merge the two and make a combined project, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with XNA all the way through. So what it is basically a game creation technology from Microsoft, which runs on Windows Phone, Xbox 360, and Windows PC. So what you can do is you can cross-platform target here. You can build your assets, and maybe you'll resize them for the phone because the screen's smaller, but you can build your assets, you can build your engine, and in fact, you can effectively have a single studio solution that contains a project for each of those three targets, and then run in parallel. There is a Windows Phone marketplace you can use to push your games out, and there's also indie games on Xbox Live where you can push things out for Xbox users as well. And of course, you can ship executables to anybody that wants to run them. So you can write the games across any platform, and the performance is very, very good. When you're running XNA on the phone, you get access to all the sensors and the network connectivity and all that kind of good stuff as well. And so you've got extremely nice integration of all the phone's abilities. You've also got potential for Xbox Live integration. You can effectively set up multiplayer games and manage those from within Xbox Live if you want. And there's also support for in-game advertising. You can put things in the marketplace as paid applications. You can give them away, or you can put adverts in. One of our students came to see me last week. He's really pleased. Said, I'm getting £3 a day from my Windows Phone game in Marketplace on advertising, and he's very pleased with this. And so you can go into Starbucks, have a latte. That's my latte today. It's great. I mean, it sounds silly, but that's not bad actually. I'm quite impressed with that. And it can only it's all good. He's been programming for two three years now, and he's got stuff out there which is turning a few heads, which is always nice to do. So XNA is great. It provides everything you need to get started. Full content management. It's all built into Visual Studio. I'm going to play around with 2D sprites, although you can work in 3D should you wish to do that. And like I said, it runs across all the platforms. So if you want to hit Windows PC, Xbox 360, Windows Phone, you can do all that with a single game engine and a few assets and a little bit of resizing should you wish to do that too. So if you've ever played a game before, new game platforms keep coming along. And I thought that when the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 and all the new high-end things came along, there'd be no more loading screens. Ha! How wrong I was. Everything seems to have a loading screen. I mean, even things that run off solid-state storage have loading screens. Very, very odd. But in terms of how games work, there's basically three things that they do. They bring in the textures, and having done that, having got the assets into the game, they then run as fast as they can, updating the game world, which is moving things along, and drawing the game world, which is putting a picture on the screen for the user to see. And that's it. That's how games are. Everything from Call of Duty downwards works like this. Okay, fetch the assets, and then you have a game engine which is effectively doing the game universe, detecting collisions, updating the state of objects, blah, blah, blah. And then you have a rendering engine that's going as fast as it can, drawing that. And that's effectively what XNA knows about and how it all works. In XNA, you make a brand new, shiny XNA project, and effectively it's a plugin for Visual Studio, which gives you a whole bunch of new project types. How many folk here have downloaded the Windows Phone Developer Kit, the SDK? Oh, good. It's free. Get it from create.msdn.com. Get it later. All the demos I'm doing, everything I'm showing you, this laptop only has the free software on it. So the toolchain that I'm showing you is the one you can get for free off Create like that. So get it down there, make a brand new project, an XNA project, and you find you get four methods which you have to fill in. Initialize and load content. Initialize sets things up, and load content fetches your pictures and all the good stuff. And then once the game's going, we're updating and we're drawing as fast as we can. And that's all we do. Okay? That's all we do. And that's how games are. And so making a game, let's have a go at making a game. There's an empty project. In Visual Studio, and can't get over the size, that's enormous. And so effectively what you've got is the game one class, which contains initialize, load content, draw, and update. And we're going to just fill those in. And we're going to start off with a very simple thing and then play with it. And if you've no idea what kind of game you want to make, I did have this rather dodgy idea of saying to you folk right at the start, okay, anyone got any good ideas for a game? And see what happens. But I've done that kind of thing before with students, and it's a big tumbleweed. Nothing much happens because it's really quiet. So we're going to play around with stuff, see where it takes us, see what we can do, and then see if we can put some playability in, because fundamentally most games are the same. And I'm aiming at something fairly simple and casual just for now. But we're going to fill in these methods, and we're going to start off with a smudge. I drew that. Isn't it good? That's a smudge. That's probably in English. Smudge isn't really rude in a foreign language, is it? Thank goodness for that. Okay, that's a relief. It's just a white texture which I drew in Photoshop. And it's basically got some transparent areas around the edges. And that's my PNG file, which I'm going to put into my game. And I'm going to put that in the game and draw it. And I'm going to make sprites. If you're making a 2D game, everything everything in the game is going to be sprite-powered. Okay, we're going to have these objects that move around the screen, and everything you see on the screen will be a sprite. Sprites are known for having position and an image of some kind. And effectively, they've got three behaviors, or at least the ones I've made have got three. Reset, draw, and update. Reset is effectively the sprite's version of load content, puts it back to how it was at the start of the game. And draw and update are given references to the parent game, as is reset, to get itself going. So this is my sprite class, and let's show you some interesting code. Okay, this is how you make a sprite. This is how I made a sprite, and I can give you all the code for this. It's actually very, very simple. Effectively, when the program kicks up, we declare a variable called smudge texture, and we'd use the content manager to load a texture 2D type with the asset name of smudge. So that image comes in and gets put in the texture. I then have a constructor for my sprite class. I give it a reference to the game it's part of. I give it the texture. I place it on the screen at 0.0. I make the color red. I make it a 20th the width of the screen and with a rotation value of 0. Now, I've made the constructor for this. I'll show you it in a minute. It's not rocket science, because that's science that involves rockets. Okay. I did this talk in Paris, and next door, the European Space Agency were doing a talk. And it was so cool, because I could say at one point in the presentation, this is not rocket science, because that's next door. And everyone, I was so passed with. I should get out more. All we're doing is creating a sprite. And then once I've actually created it, I can think in terms of doing things with it. So this is the toughest slide in the presentation, folks. Get this one, and you've nailed it. Don't worry, though, because it's actually quite simple. This is the behavior which will draw my sprite for me. Remember I said the draw method in the sprite does the drawing. There's a thing called sprite batch. If you play around with game engines, you'll find that the way they work, they like to batch up all the operations and then do a single transaction with the hardware graphics accelerator to make the new screen. And that's what sprite batch does for us, and it provides a method called draw. And all that draw does is it takes a texture, a position, which is the vector. You can, if you want to, you can cut a particular part of the texture out. So if you want to zoom in, you can do that. If you want to have an animated sprite where different parts of the texture are different frames of animation, you can do that too. And that's where you would put the source rectangle. If you put null there, it means get the whole thing. That gets me all of smudge. Okay? This is the color of the light we're going to shine on it. This is how far we're going to rotate it. This is effectively the center point in the sprite about which it will rotate. And then we're going to scale it. And we're not going to rotate it or reflect it or anything. And then we're going to draw it on the same depth level. This is the toughest slide in the presentation. And it's basically the draw behavior for the sprite. Once you've got that, then, hey, that's the easiest one. Update for this particular sprite does nothing. because for this particular sprite, this is my parent class. I'm going to effectively build a little sprite class hierarchy. Now, the name of the game, what I want to do is I want to be able to have sprites that move, sprites that grow, sprites that contain text, sprites that are animated, sprites that bounce off the sides, sprites that do different things. And so the idea is sprites you can shoot, sprites that can shoot you. And I'll do that by overriding the behaviors in the parent class. The absolute top class just has a placeholder method, which is empty. And then I'll start making classes that do other things. We might make the sprite grow. We might make it bounce. We're not quite sure yet. Okay, so that's okay. Everyone okay so far? Fine. I'll take that as a yes. Okay, so right, so here we go. So if I now drift into my demonstrations, of which I have lots, and again, you get all this. Maybe if you're lucky, I'll show you Cheese Lander later. But I don't want to peek too early. Okay. Once you've seen Cheese Lander, any concerns that you might have about, is my game good enough for marketplace, will go away. Okay. Absolutely. Demos drop in here, and here's a very very simple smudge game, which I'm just going to open up, and I'll open it up with Express for Windows Phone, and I'll show you the magic. And here it is. This is my project. This is my solution, which contains two projects, the behaviors and the assets. And if we dig down here, we'll find that there's smudge.png. All I did was drag that into the solution and drop it on the project. That's how I get my programs actually into the thing. And if you look at the code, there's nothing particularly magic here. It's all fairly clear-cut and simple stuff. This is my sprite. There's my interface so that I can make components from anywhere. These are the properties of my sprite, where to draw, what it looks like, where to draw it, how much scale, rotation, color, and origin. A reset that does nothing, a draw that does that horrible method that you've seen before, and a little bit of constructor magic, which gets the texture and stores it, sets the position, sets the color, sets the rotation, sets the origin, and then effectively the best scaling I've found. The problem you have with multiple platforms is that they have different resolution screens. Now, Windows Phone has a single resolution screen, 800 by 480. All Windows phones are like that. But I want to make my game as future-proof as I can. So I'm going to effectively scale my things in terms of how many of these do you want to fit across the screen. And that little piece of magic there, the sprite width, takes the width factor, and it basically works out how wide I want it to be, and then works out a scaling factor based on how wide the texture is. And then away we go. And this probably won't impress you too much, but I'm going to run ahead with it anyway. One of the things you should never do is you shouldn't lower the audience expectations beforehand. You should just let them find out for themselves, Robert. So here we go. Up it goes. What's just happened? I pressed the run button, and I've told the environment to target the emulator. Okay? So it's now going out into an emulation of Windows Phone, which is here. And it's rather nice because I'll put a link at the end, you can go online and actually get skins that you can skin the emulation. So that's actually what my phone looks like. That's my blue Nokia, and that's my blue Nokia. I mean, it makes naff all difference to the actual program, but there you go. You're probably not very impressed by that. If you are, then you could be my new best friend. What it's done is it's actually drawn the smudge. Now, it's centered about the origin of the screen, which is top left-hand corner. By default, XNA games wake up in landscape orientation like this. And so we have a little red smudge. Now, I can prove that it works by stopping this program and playing around with some of the numbers. If I go into my constructor call, I say I'd like 20 of them across the screen. If I change that value to 2... then I'll get a much bigger smudge when it comes up. There you go. And now that's effective. That's a quarter of the screen width because I'm in the middle of the texture. And there we go. And so I could make it blue, make a blue smudge. What I'm doing is I'm changing the color of the light, which is shone on the white sprite to make it appear a different color. So I just go blue. Why not? Now, this is probably not good enough for marketplace. Okay, it won't impress many people at all, really. I thought it might do that. Here we go. Up it comes, and here we go. It's now a blue smudge. Now, the background colour, if you're wondering where the background colours come from, let's go down and have a look at the actual code that draws the picture. If we go down here to the draw method, then you find that the graphics device clear method sets the colour to cornflower blue. That's actually just the XNA. Someone in XNA must have gone, oh, I like cornflower blue, and made the screen that colour. I'm quite pleased that the colour teal is now becoming fashionable. And I learned about teal from Windows 3. It's finally coming in. But you can clear that black, whatever you want. And then that's the beginning of my batching. Just call smudge, just draw smudge, end the batching, and you're good. But only one smudge isn't really very impressive. So I think we'll just put this program out of its misery, or out of your misery, which is probably a better way of putting it, and we'll crack on. Okay? So, very, very simple sprite engine, very extensible, because what we can do is we can actually take this and add extra behaviors. A bunch of smudges might be fun. So all we have to do is make a list of these things, and then we can add smudges. So there's my sprites. Now this is, again, standard gameplay technique. What you do is you want to have a play field, you're making Space Invaders, and you could use this engine for Space Invaders, easy peasy. So what you do is basically you have a whole bunch of sprites on the screen, and you slap them all into a list. And then when you want to draw or update or move your game around, you just iterate through that list and you draw them all in turn. So there's a for each loop that works all of them and draws them all. This works terribly well. Okay, this is how you do it. This is how games work. Okay, they have a whole bunch of game objects, and we have two behaviors. We update them, and we draw them, and away we go. And it's as simple as that. So, yeah, we could make them bounce or fly around the screen. I thought it would be fun to use the Windows Phone touchpad because it's there, and I wanted you to understand just how easy it is to use. Okay? Now, how many folk have used the touchpad? Oh, okay, that's good, right, fine, keep going. So you, the rest of you will learn something useful, that's nice, that's good, that's a win. So, the initialize method is supposed to set your game up, and that's what we're doing here. And effectively we're saying, okay, get the touch panel fired up, and enable the gestures tap and free drag. So that means that now the touch panel hardware is being linked through to the drivers, and the drivers are actually passing on those messages. So if a user touches the phone or drags their finger around, I'm going to get told about this. It's effectively as if in Windows Forms you had to turn on the mouse moved events. This is effectively turning on the tap and the free drag events, which we're going to get. And so this is done once and once for all, and now what happens is that we can, in our update for the game, we can basically go, okay, Mr. Touch Panel, do you have any gestures? If you do, I'm going to keep on going around dealing with them. And I'm going to read the gesture from the touch panel, then I'm going to get the position of it and use that to place my sprite on the screen. So all that will happen is that every time we touch or move on the screen, we get a smudge drawn at that point. And it really is as simple as that. And so here's a demo of smudge drawing, which I can quite easily find my way to. And I've added about 10 more lines of code, but they were really good lines, so that's okay. So now run. Ooh. Oh, that's because Robert's an idiot. Anyone spot what I did? I found this annoying. I've got to go down here and go Express for Windows, otherwise the prototypes don't work. I've installed lots of other free versions of... I wanted to write stuff for the micro framework. I had to have the ordinary version, the vanilla version of Studio as well. So here we go. My code is what you've seen. Run the program in the emulator, and who wouldn't? And up it comes. We get our lovely cornflower blue. We can fix that later if we want. You're going to run or just grin at me? Okay, so now, there you go. But I go, wee, and yeah, didn't work too well. But I can now actually just draw on the screen, and all that's happening now is it's actually making a rather nasty smear all over it. If you don't believe, if you were wondering what it looks like in real life, okay, we'll stop that. I have a Nokia phone sitting on the end of this USB cable. It's connected via a program called Zune, which is the media manager. It's like iTunes, but not evil. Sorry. Sorry, iTunes was in fact written by the devil. It's got some of his code comments in and all sorts, apparently. But yeah, that'll come out of the video. Zune provides the link, and it's how I put the media onto my Lumia. Okay, so I've got it synchronizing. I've got a fair few bits and pieces on there. That's providing the connection. My phone has been developer unlocked, which is something you can do once you're registered as a developer. You can unlock up to 3 devices to put your own programs on. And so now if I bring up my little camera, there's my phone. I'll just open it up so we can actually see it running. Okay, and now I'll go into Studio and start the target as device, hit run, and then go back to my camera. And what will happen now? I've got 16 emails, my goodness. It's a whole week's worth there. There's my screen. If I now go, wee, now it works much nicer on the real thing, I reckon. Now that's not particularly wonderful, but it's a start. And we're kind of getting there. Anyone impressed yet? Fair enough. Okay. Stop the program, and it'll go back. Now the nice thing about this, if you've done phone development, you'll know how wonderful this is. I can put breakpoints in, I can single step, I can view the contents of variables, I can use the immediate window to change the contents of values in the phone. I can debug the code in the phone straight from the PC. So everything that you know and love about debugging in Studio on desktop, you can do in phone as well. And it works terribly, terribly well. It's really good. So we can draw things. That's where we can draw smudges. Fantastic. Let's make a little bit of... let's make it grow. So I'm making a growing sprite, and the growing sprite just effectively will make the update method increase the scale by a tiny amount, 0.05f, and pop that in. So now, what I want you to understand now is, okay, if I need a sprite that does something, I can now make one that behaves that way. And that's what I'm doing here. So we're making a sprite that grows, and go back into the demos, go back into my demo directory, and we'll just do that. That's the wrong one, Robert. That's where we finish. Oh, dear. Need more practice. So here's my tiny. This is the tiny one. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm not going to get caught by you again. Ha! I'll get caught by something else. So this is still not that impressive, but I still quite like it. So up we come. And what's going to happen now is as I draw, things get bigger. Eventually. And there is a slight problem with this particular version of the code, in that if I do that, they all start to grow. And then eventually, the screen fills up with red. We're moving into particle effect country. That's not a bad place to be. If you want to make things that fountains that flash up and down, or gunfire that sort of causes bits to fly off, or all that kind of good stuff, then this is kind of where we're going now. And if you want to do that, that's fine. It's easy. What I've shown you, 10, 15 lines of code. It's not particularly impressive yet, though. We've got to do a few things to make it look nice. So let's keep on cracking forward, Robert. So it's still boring. A few colours would be nice. If you draw with a colour, it effectively stamps that colour on whatever you're drawing. So white things appear that colour. So let's make a little method called random colour. Now, in XNA, colours are RGB values plus alpha. So you can draw with a transparent colour, which means that you can draw something that will then show the background through to a particular percentage, which is kind of nice, because that means that if you want to have like cloud effects, it's easy. And so there we go. I'm not doing that. I'm picking 3 random numbers, R, G, and B, and then I'm making myself a new color, R, G, and B, and then 255. This is like random. That gives me a color which I can use to pick the color of my thing. And we're going to go back to another demo now. Gosh. Can't have too many demos. Must be a faster way of doing this, Rob. But who cares? So what I'm doing now is every time I draw a colour, draw a sprite, I'm picking a different colour for it. And they're random. And if I now draw... Now that's actually quite psycho. And it sort of... Now, that's actually... almost impressive, although it does have the same problem that the previous program did, which is eventually it'll come and eat you. But it's, again, you've seen, if I start drawing now, I'll get some more little ones, it'll really start to chug, poor thing, and they'll all grow as well. So you could have some kind of a snake that you guide around the screen and gets fatter. If you want to make missile, remember missile command with the tracker ball? I'm going to make missile command. That's your basically your the things that the missiles collide, the exploding areas of the screen. So, yeah, you can do that. And adding a few colours is nice. What I wondered about, though I haven't done it, is rather than making the colours random, lighting up the thing in different colours so that they have to collide with other things that are moving about the screen to get points. It's a bit snake-esque, but you could make these things fall down or whatever. And it's coming along. It's certainly more impressive than the first one we started off. So we've got coloured smudges, and we quite like that. We haven't got a game yet, and we have a problem, which is that if we put lots of these on there, the line slows right down. And so this is a fairly horrible piece of code, which I'm not particularly proud of, but it does have one advantage. It doesn't have work. It's really good. I look at my game sprites, and I'm putting an upper limit on how many smudges I can have, and if I'm heading for that limit, I just take away the one, the oldest one, the one at the base of the list. Now, I thought I would do this, and then I'd have to figure out, start making a sprite pool and doing all kinds of sensible things because the memory allocation would be a mess and the whole thing would chug like mad. Doesn't turn out to be that bad, actually. It actually behaves quite well. So if I do that, I've got a clicker. Then let's make some shorter smudges. Let's go back into here. Doo-doo-doo. And, yeah, this time it's actually looking quite fun, although I haven't quite figured out what to do with it. And this is the point where I was earlier this week when I was sitting there just doodling with code. And my wife came in and took a look at it and went, "That's quite cute. You could draw with that." And I said, "Yeah, you could, couldn't you?" So that's how it ended up. And so now, yeah, we can draw on the screen. And the moment it's not particularly wonderful. If I keep on going after a while, the older ones start to go away. Now, maybe there's some gameplay to be had here. Maybe it's just fun as it is. I mean, I'll have to think about... I was thinking about marking out particular areas of the screen that mean something in a particular way or having stuff grow. But it's not unpleasant. And I quite like it. So, you know what? And you know how it works. So as far as you're concerned, you can take this idea and do what you like with it. So I'll stop that going. And I'll keep on moving forward because that's a good direction. And, yeah, it's not very efficient code. And I did fret a bit about this because I tell my students you should effectively, as far as memory management's concerned on constrained devices like phones, you should take the taxman approach to memory, which is your program starts, it asks the system how much memory it's got, and then grabs all of it, you know, never lets it go, just hangs on to it and does all its stuff inside. Now, in C#, you don't need to do that because the garbage man's pretty good. And I was looking at that thinking, my goodness, this is not going to behave itself and we'll have memory that goes up like that and then it'll stutter when the garbage man comes in, blah, blah, blah. However, seems to work fine. I've not had a problem. One of the things I tell my students is that if you're writing code like this, then what you should do is you should work on the basis that I'll fix the problems when they occur and not before. I've seen students fret enormously about things that actually make no difference. And they'll worry about performance before they've even seen it go. If you fire it up and it runs like a dog, then absolutely you should go in there and do something about it. But don't do anything until you've hit that point. Don't do stupid things, but don't do things... don't solve problems before they're problems, as it were. What I'll show you a bit later on is there's a really nice performance analysis tool that you get with Studio on the phone where you can spot things like this. My experience has been if you're writing XNA for the phone, then you will not have problems with garbage and large amounts of stuff. Silverlight, a bit more careful. Some of the Silverlight controls, you do have to be careful about keeping the memory tidy and behaving yourself there. But as far as XNA is concerned, it's quite frugal. It seems to behave itself quite well. So I'll show you that later. So finished program, yeah. All it does is let you draw things. And do you think we dare put it in the shop? Tough audience, Rob. This is silly drawing. And this just lets me draw things on the screen with lots of colours. Now, there's all kinds of directions I could take this. I can use the accelerometer to actually tip, to make the smudges change when we tip round. I could make them move over time. It would be quite easy, I haven't done it, to add a save button. And what I have done, if you take a look at my code, make it a bit larger, I've made a couple of tiny changes. If you look in the, that's added a moving sprite too for the hell of it to see what that would do. But if you look in initialize, I also enable the double tap gesture now. And if you tap twice on the screen, it now clears the sprites off the screen and gives you a clean palette to go at. So if you look in the update method, it's a little bit more complicated, but not much. This is not going to go well. I think you'll see what happens. It's not pretty, but it does work. Gesture available. If it's double tap, clear the collection. Otherwise, draw some more, and away we go. And this one needs a bit of attention. But there you go. It's quite nice. You could draw. What I've done for this one is I've made the ink kind of swell up and then stop, so that it looks like you are drawing with something on a piece of paper and the ink soaking into the paper. You could keep on adding pictures, and eventually it'll start to wrap around. But I was thinking about this being a reasonable basis of a game, because what you could make the screen scroll sideways as this happens, because you can effectively offset these things or slide them along. And then you could start trying to catch things with a long tail of different colours, picking up different coloured objects. And yeah, why not? Yeah, why not? It's fun. I like playing with code. Maybe I'm a little sad. Maybe I'm a big sad. Well, maybe. But we're heading in a direction where we're basically noodling around with stuff, and maybe you have an idea, maybe not. A few things, here we go. We could do all kinds of stuff. If you go onto the interwebs, you can find, there's some Jumpstart presentations that I did with Andy Wiggly, which are quite, anyone seen those? Oh, they're hilarious. We did the presentations in America. America's great, because in America, if an Englishman does something really stupid, or they go, oh, you Brits, you're so funny. And we think, yep, that's what it was. I was being funny. Very useful. We did these things, and we covered all this stuff in video form. We could add images from the camera. We could make text as animated. We could make things rotate. We could make a snake game. We could make a missile command game. The sprite framework makes all this possible. Just add new ones and keep on traveling forwards. And it really is as easy as that. One of the things I tell my students, which is not actually sort of a recipe for bad quality, but something which I think I hope that they'll kind of go with, don't be afraid to send stuff out there to see if anybody likes it or not. One of my year before last, I did this game development thing with our students called Destruction Golf. And we basically gave them two words, destruction and golf. And we turned them loose. And we effectively locked them in the department for an overnight programming session, 24 hours. And they had to produce a game which contained the words destruction and golf. And we had robots demolishing buildings. We had all kinds of stuff. One of my students, a guy called Harry, put destruction golf out there for free. And this was when Marketplace was kind of new, and the phone was kind of new, and he got loads of downloads because nobody else was making much at the time. So it's picked up a lot since then. But it's quite funny because he put it out there for free, and it was just, you're flicking, because there is a flick gesture which you can get from the touch panel, which will give you a vector, which is the direction of the flick. So what you can do is you can use that, and if you want to get into this, I'll show you the code, actually, I'm really proud of this. And all this stuff's available, free to download, so let's go have a look. I promised to show you Cheese Roller. I'll show you Destruction Golf, because this is kind of funky. If you want to do things with this kind of stuff, pretty soon you think, whoa, I need some physics. Because the one thing we're going to want to do with our little balls is probably make them bounce off each other. And physics engines are really hard to write, said the man who has tried and failed to write one. But they're really easy to get hold of. So there's a guy that wrote a thing called the Farseer engine, which is really easy to use. And effectively, you just put a bunch of objects in there, and then you fire it up. And that's what I pointed Harry and all the students at. And effectively, if I fire this up, I'll show you what you get. Now, this again might not end well, because I think that's still running, Robert. Okay, well, we'll see what happens. what's the worst that could happen? Oh, that. Oh, we're good. It's all good. It's all golden. So this is my what artwork. I mean, look at that house. Eat your heart out, Vincent van Gogh. Now, I had a destruction golf. I said I didn't need audio, but I probably do for this bit. You'll hear it from the speaker. You can flick the screen, and it'll fire the ball. And the idea was that you basically knock things off platforms, then move on to the next one. And to do that, it's kind of useful if you've got things that have got physics. Now, the ball is at the moment fixed because it's not moving, and that's a bit of code I put in. The shelf is fixed, and the house isn't. So if I flick the screen, I can blow the house off. And if I'm lucky, oh, bum, it falls off the end. Bump, and I get reset. So the idea is to, and it's only one level. If I get stupid and do that, it goes, whee, which is very silly, runs off the end of the texture. And it's not going well, that. Eventually the ball will come down again and reset. Now, if you can get your head round the first bit that I showed you, which is the simple sprite stuff, you can get your head round Farseer. And Farseer, I'm using the old version, version 2, which I've got working on the phone. Version 3 is based on a thing called Bokeh. Okay, it's reset now, and so off we go again. And it's what Harry did was he took this. Oh, that's not going to work very well. That's weak. Try again. Let's try it again. Oh, that could be a good one. No. And the two words that spring to mind actually are the words angry and birds. But if you find out how easy it is to whack out an angry birds clone using Farseer and Windows Phone, then you really would begrudge those guys those enormous sums of money they've earned. But it's kind of nice. That one might be a win. But the idea is that having done that, you then flick on the thing, pans to the right. One of the things that I could have mentioned, it's all out there. You can put transformation matrices on your drawing. So what I have there is a translation. So if I do actually fire the ball off the edge of the screen, that's what's doing the panning. I don't have to move any of the sprites around. I'm just effectively changing the X offset of the translation. And as you see, I'm probably a bit of bounding would have helped, because at the moment it's just flying out across cornflower blue, and then it comes back again, and we're back for business. So if you want to get serious about this and put a bit of physics in, then Farseer is very good for that, and it'll handle. I wrote a game which I haven't published yet, which was based on letter tiles falling down from the sky, and then you flick them into particular buckets to get different words. And one of the things you can do in XNA, which is quite nice, is you can write custom importers of the data. There's importers for PNG files, 3D graphics, meshes, sounds, all kinds of good stuff. But you can write your own as well. So I wrote an importer just for dictionary files and got that going, and then didn't do anything with it, which is kind of stupid of me. But there you go. Why do you keep telling me you're stupid, Rob? They've already figured it out. So, yeah, don't be afraid. Back to the plot. Harry put this game out, and storm of apathy. It's one of the things about the internet that amazes and annoys me is it's amazing how rude people are about things they got for free. It's very unfair. You put this thing out, you put your heart and soul into, and one of two things happen: nothing, which is very depressing, or lots of bad stuff, which is very depressing. I mean, the most impressive app from marketplace downloads for me is the one I wrote in about an hour, which I was driving into work in the car. And Windows Phone has got rather nice voice response. You can tell it to send texts for you, and it works, unlike some other, because I could mention Siri. It actually does quite, but they haven't made a big fuss of it, because it's just there. It's not quite, you can't ask it questions, but you can give it commands to start programs. And it was annoying me because I could say start Zune, and it would start the Zune program running on the phone to play back music, but there were no commands to make it actually play anything, which drove me nuts. You know, so I can't get my music going by speech alone. So I wrote a thing called Play Music, and Play Music is a tiny XNA program which uses the media library, and when it runs, it just goes, okay, I'll find your random playlist and I'll play it. And that's all it does. And I've had 2,000 downloads of that, which is quite nice. And that was written in my lunch break. Because driving into work, I thought, why can't I get the blasted thing to play music by giving a command? I can show you one here if you like. But it took literally 10 minutes to write. It was very, very quick. The hard bit, as you'll see in a minute, the hard bit was... So let's see if I can make this go. How could it possibly go? So if I hold down this key here and go... wrong one. Hold down this key here. Start play music.
Starting play music.
Here she goes. And now that's my XNA program. And it starts playing some air, which is fair enough. And all that does is it just basically counts down and then exits. Poof, gone. And lots of people like that because it lets them do something which they couldn't do before. Okay, and the next version of that is going to be version 2 called Play More Music. And Play More Music is for the situation where you got it on random play and you hear a track that you haven't heard for a while and you think, ooh, I wouldn't mind listening to the album of that. So you just say, play more music, and what it'll do is it'll basically find the album it's from and then play it all. Now, these are no-brainers. From a coding point of view, they are easy-peasy. The other one I've had success in inverted commas was called tip light. And tip light just makes a light that changes color as you tip the phone. That's all it does. And all I had to do was use the accelerometer to get hold of the... where's tip light? And if I tip the phone, you can see it just changes color. And if I tip it to a nice color and tap the screen, it holds that color forever. And my wife went, oh, that's nice. And for me... In all seriousness, I'll take that, absolutely. And because torch apps are one thing, but that one, actually. And the only fiddly bit was because they're a bit noisy, you have to actually do a fair amount of work to sort of clean up the signals from it, because all these things are a bit noisy and you have to sort of tie them up. But don't be afraid to put stuff out there which is daft. One of the things that makes the Americans great at doing stuff is they aren't afraid to fail. Now, we Brits are scared to death of looking stupid in public, apart from me, obviously. and I think the Europeans are fairly close as well. And so in America, you're not really a success until you've at least failed at a couple of businesses and gone bust massively and what have you. They're quite happy to lob stuff out there and see what happens. And we should do the same. Don't be afraid to sell it. So here's a quick rundown of what to do to get your app out there. Okay, so... what I want to take you through now is just a few slides. Now, the reason they're here, and there's lots of them, is because this is a work of reference, people. If you want to go back and take a look at these later, it's all here for you. I could stand up and say it, that's fine. But you can get this deck and work through it yourself. I don't really mind. If you go onto the debug menu, then there's a Start Performance Analysis tab, which does exactly what it says on the tin. It basically runs analysis on your program, and it'll give you things like memory usage, frame rates, and... garbage collection, when it's happening, and you find it from debug, and then away you go. You can find out how it's doing resource-wise, or find out how it's doing in terms of where it's spending its time. Like I say to my students, don't optimize until you've actually figured out where the optimization needs to be. So this is very good for finding out where your program's spending all its time. And so you can make a whole bunch of settings and then reuse them and run the program up, and you get a graph that looks a bit like this. And this is another program I wrote, which I can show you. I think we'll skip that demo because I want to get to the end of this before Christmas. This is Funky Camera. What Funky Camera is a camera which is funky. Actually, is it on here? Should be. I put all my own programs. I actually buy all my own programs. I really should get out more. There's Funky Camera. I just started running and go back to the slide here. And what Funky Camera does is it basically funkifies the image. So the left-hand image is actually normal, and the right-hand image is kind of funky. Well, I think it's quite nice. But what it actually does, and again, you can get the code. I use this in... one of the jump starts. It basically gets the RGB values for each pixel and adds a number to each of them and wraps them round. And that's all it does. So they wrap round and they go, it's solarization basically, and it's really easy to do. I've written one for the Kinect, which I want to write for this thing called an averaging camera, which basically takes 80 or so averages of the frame and displays that. And you can get some astonishing effects if you start moving it around and people appear and then disappear. I digress. This is Funky Camera running. Okay? So Funky Camera started up here, and then nothing much happens for a while because this is the camera initializing. Then suddenly it goes nutso. This is the processor hammering away because it's taking an individual frame. It's actually going through every single pixel in the frame and then changing the color and then doing that again about a 30th of a second afterwards. So it's actually hammering the thing quite hard, and it works. There's no, these things are powerful devices. It doesn't judder, it's fine. But this is kind of what you get. And you can see the garbage man kicked in, and my memory usage kind of went up as I allocated my frame buffers and then stayed the same. So that's a fairly nice application to ship. And if you want to, that wasn't meant to happen. If you want to, you can actually run that demo, but I'll it just shows you what you've seen. The thing I want you to take away, though, really, is that it is just as simple as clicking on that option in the debug menu and then hitting the go. And it makes a file of a performance log, which you can then pull back and take a look at and drill down into and analyze. And it'll work on the real phone or on the emulator. So you can target either device. The emulation's very good. It's functionally complete. But it doesn't give you any kind of feel for real performance. It's quite weird. Some things are faster on the phone, some things are faster on the PC. The phone's graphics go quick, whereas the PC's running through several layers of DirectX and stuff. The PC's got lots of grunt, so data processing stuff runs fast on that, whereas on the phone it chugs a bit, and then that's it. But yes, if you haven't, how many of you have got Windows phones? Yes! Excellent. They are really nice. Surprisingly, I saw this cartoon on the internet. There's a guy wearing one of these sandwich boards. And on the front it said, "The end is nigh." And on the back it said, "Microsoft makes quite a good phone." It's true, it is, it's good. So, yeah. If you want to ship your application, the starting point is a thing called a zap file. And the zap file is basically an archive. If you're an old person, remember Java archives, jar files? Well, a zap file is a bit like that. It contains assemblies, resources, and a manifest. And the idea is that the zap file is what you push up to marketplace. And I'll show you that in a second or two. So you go and you find your zap file, and it's also got your identity baked in and a unique GUID for your app as part of it. And if you take the thing to bits, then it's actually a zip file. So you rename it, rename your zap to zip and take a look. And this is a Windows Phone puzzle game that I put together. And there's an icon for it, an app manifest, the DLL that contains the program. If you had pictures and other things, they'd be in here as well. And then the app manifest, which is these are two documents you must know a bit about because they are how you make your app ready for selling. And app manifest just really tells the system, okay, these are the files we use. And so it's got that particular schema, and we've got a single DLL, and that's absolutely fine. This one's kind of boring, and Studio will make it. The next one's kind of interesting, because this is the one which tells the Windows Marketplace what your phone wants to use, what resources you're using. So if you use the camera, you must ask for it. If you use location, you must ask for it. If you use media library, blah, blah, blah. So you basically just put in the request that you want. During the authentication process, the approval process, they'll check to make sure you behave yourself and don't do naughty things and use things you haven't asked for, which is fine. And this is the kind of thing it looks like. There's a lump in the middle called capabilities, which should be brown. Landscape gardening? No? Okay. Google it later. No, Bing it later. Better. Capabilities. Okay. Location, media, phone dialer, push notifications, sensors, web browser, camera, contacts, appointments. These are some of them. There are new ones with, I think Mango has some more as well on top of these. But the idea is that you ask for each of these in this file. And you have to get that right. You have to give the description. So I put down who wrote it, the version number, the genre, which is basically, is it an app or is it a game? Because on Windows Phone, the games appear in the game, Xbox Live Game Hub, and the apps appear in the programs area. And give yourself an author description, blah, blah, blah. And once you've done that, then you're pretty much from a code point of view, good to ship it. Edit it from within Studio, because it's just inside the solution tree. It's there, look. So that's the file. So you just drop in, edit these bits into shape, knock out the lines you don't need, and then away you go. Your code is now pretty much there to go. What you have to do next is make some icons. I made a bunch for Rob's Red Nose game, which is another one of my million sellers. Right. You need... There's more then. You just need 99173 and 200 are the sizes that you need. Now, I just use Photoshop and knock these things out and resize them. Here's a little tip from someone who's fallen over this one. Here's how you don't do your artwork for your games. What you don't do is spend 10 minutes knocking up these things when you finish writing the code and slap it out there. What you do is find a friend who's good at graphics design and get them to do it. It adds enormously to the value of your app if your icons and your screenshots and description look nice. An enormous amount. I tell my students, see if you can find a graphic designer to put on your team. I don't know what it is they do, but they make stuff that looks nice, whereas I make stuff that looks like that, which is not... It's not bad. I mean, the only thing I do know about graphic design is, Rob, don't try and do too much. Okay? Don't think that an extra font will add value, especially if it's Comic Sans. Okay? So don't go there. Okay? So you put the icons in, and what I would advise you to do, if you do want to make this a serious proposition, is I would say, do the design stuff in parallel with the game creation. Once you've got your ideas sorted, start getting someone so that you don't rush this stuff, because I rushed it at the end of getting the marketplace, and it never looks really good when I do it that way. Okay, so the Zap file itself, if you build a Visual Studio project, everything winds up in the bin directory, and this is the wrong one because that's the debug tree. And if you look down here, another one of my programs called Damage Calc, which is that was quite a good one. I should put that out there, actually, because that's quite nice. If I'm walking through the middle of Brussels and I see a camera for sale that's so many euros, okay, and I want to go, okay, how much is that in real money-ish? What DamageCal does is it figures out the currency conversions and local tax. So you put in how much the local tax rate is, because in America it's sneaky. In America, they have sales tax on top, so it's 6% more than you think. Doesn't stop me buying it. But it costs more than I thought it would. So put the sales tax on and then work out the currency conversions. That's what Damage Calc did, I found it quite useful. Version 2 could go online with a bit of XML and pull down the current live conversion values. Remember, of course, the phone, very connected, web client, all that stuff all works, very easy to use, so you can go on and consume web services like that. And you can do that inside a game as well, which is nice. I wanted to have this game called Website Invaders, where you basically point it at a website and it pulls down all the art assets and uses those as designs. You could attack the Apple website. But then I thought there may well be copyright implications here, and it could get very rude very quick. Anyway, I digress again. So there you go. That's your Zap file. That's what you push up the line to Microsoft when you want to submit your program to the marketplace. And there are one or two rules. If you're sending it over the air, i.e. downloading it through 3G, then no more than 20 megabytes. If you're sending it over Wi-Fi, 400 meg. And everyone goes, ooh, no, 400 meg, that's not big enough for my enormous role-playing game with lots of models and textures. That's no problem, because any program running on Windows Phone can make use of what's called isolated storage, which is effectively a file store that app can use that can be up to the limit of the memory in the device. So if you want to pull down another 200 or 300 megabytes of stuff to go with your application, first time it runs, oh, the file isn't in ISO store. You want me to download it? Yes, please. Bang. Down it comes. So if you want to have lots of data, if you're doing a mapping program with lots of stuff, that's very easy to do. It also works for games. So, yep, you can do that. That link is worth following, because that's got an extremely good description of the requirements, how the program should behave, and what's important to Microsoft in terms of approving your app. If you want to, you can push the Zap file out to other phone owners who've unlocked their phones, and they can deploy them on the phone. They can also deploy them to the emulator. So there's a thing called a Zap file application deployment app, which you can use to put a phone. So you could send me your Zap file. I could put it in here and run it and give you comments. I had that with my students. It's quite interesting. When we started off doing phone development at Hull, we had one Windows phone, which is mine, haha. I had this thing where at lunchtime students could drop by and try their apps on my phone, see if it would work, and they could push me their Zap files. Quite a few students put things in the marketplace, having never tried them on a phone before. It's quite weird. They come into my office and, oh, that's how it works. Wow, that's quite good. Woo, that's nice. And the emulation is pretty good. The latest version will even do emulation of the accelerometer. So you can tip the phone in 3D on the PC screen, and you can watch the thing. You can watch your game, your app respond. It also does a really nice emulation of the location-aware stuff, in that you can actually move around on Bing Maps and have the phone emulation transported to that position, which is quite sweet too. But that, again, I digress again. So, obfuscation. I do that in my lectures, apparently. Okay, moving on. If you push your Zap file out, it's quite scary. Even ILDASM, which comes free with Studio, that'll take a look in your code and figure out how it works, but there are some very nice C-sharp disassemblers out there. If you're pushing code out to customers and people without having first obfuscated it, then it's not good, because it's very easy to unpick and perhaps copy. So what you should do is take a careful approach to this. Microsoft have made the phone as secure as they can be, but anybody with access to the hardware can put things on JTAGs and make the processor do weird stuff and break into it. So a physical device is never going to be secure against that kind of stuff. So when you put stuff out there which you have a lot of investment in, then look at obfuscation, particularly for algorithms and stuff. And there's a tool from Preemptive which provides a couple of things. It's not quite as good a deal as it used to be, but they're still giving a version away that you can use sensibly. And what you can do with that is you can effectively make your code hard to understand, and you can add tracking. So you can actually detect where people have been in your application. And you can also, and this is interesting, this is for Silverlight, not for XNA, you can use analytics as well from Google. So you can actually get Google reports on your Silverlight apps on your phone, which is kind of strange. But follow that link, and that'll take you to where you can find out more about the business of obfuscation, making your code hard to understand. I need to do that. So marketplace, quick word. It's the only way. Okay, you can put up to 10 apps on your phone that you've written, but your phone and your phone only. Consumer devices, everything goes through Marketplace. It's just like the App Store model, pretty much. If you're anyone here, any students here? Oh, okay. In DreamSpark? Good man. DreamSpark is a free student setup, and they can get free copies of the software and also free Marketplace membership. To the rest of us, as taxpayers, it's $99 a year for us, which is about the price of a good video game on day of release in the UK, close to about £60 or so. And I think I'll have the money just so I can write games. Great fun. So, yeah, you sign up, you pay your money, and that gives you a year's worth of membership. Students can go in for free. The URL to bear in mind is create.msn.com, because that's where the magic happens, and I'll show you my homepage in a second or two. So there you go. Payment, yep. You get 70% of the price paid once they've got up to $200. One thing which is kind of annoying is that they don't at the moment pay you the money in your home country. They pay it to you in dollars from the States. So you have to do a bit of messing around with getting a tax number and what have you. But it's a once and for all action. And once you've done it, then the money just comes through and you declare it and pay tax on it in your home country. Follow the links on the website for that. It's annoying, but it's the way it works, I'm afraid. You can put a limited number of free applications. Those are ones that you're giving away for nothing, up to 100 of those. You can publish free ones at $20 per go. Paid applications, you can push out as many as you like. And you can have a trial mode. That's try before buy. And when the code's running, I'll show you the C#, nothing to it. If info is trial, I'm in trial mode. So you could do things like only show the first two levels, no save button, blah, blah, blah. So it's very easy to write trial mode of apps. One thing you have to bear in mind, though, some people are really mean. And they mean, that is, as in not very generous. And they don't ever look in anything other than the free apps part. If you have an app which is a trial mode app, then it won't appear in the free apps list. So you'll miss all that marketplace. So what a lot of people do, there are schools of thought on this, but my advice to students is make a light version, which is free, but only has three or four levels in, always ad-funded, and a full fat version, which is paid, which you can hook them into. Now, one thing you can do in a Windows Phone app, very easily, you can link through to marketplace. So you can effectively have the user, do you want to see more by me, or do you want to see the paid version of this app? And they can touch on the link and go straight through to the marketplace entry for that product, which is nice. Another thing this Windows Phone can do, which I find amazing, you can buy apps on the web and they appear on your phone as though by magic, which is quite sweet. So that means you can send people deep links, web links, to your app and they can buy it on their PC and it appears on their phone, which is quite nice. Okay? And so there's different ways in which you can market your app, depending on how you want to do it. Marketplace submission, this is fun. Push the app out. And the system does some tests. There's a mechanical system which looks for obvious mistakes like memory leaks or using resources or writing self-modifying code or reflection.emit or other kind of bad stuff. And any of that, bang, you get banned straight back. What they do then, which is very interesting, is a person will sit down and use your program. And it quite took my breath away. I got an application refused. It failed validation because I'd done what I thought was sensible, but it turned out to be not what you're supposed to do. And there's a particular behavior with the back button to navigate out of applications that you must implement in the way that Microsoft say because it makes it consistent with all other apps. I did mine a different way, and my app got bounced. But the report said, if you go to this menu, then this menu, then this menu, and press back, you go back to the main menu, not to the previous one, and that's wrong. So the person that had tested it had been through my game and worked through and found stuff. The testing is actually very good, and the feedback's good as well. And it's manually tested. It's actually not a machine. It's a person that does this. That's why you're paying your money every year. It takes a few days, and comes back. You get a PDF, and you get specific feedback targeting your issues, and away you go. And, yeah, it's okay. It's not very good for your ego when it comes back failed, but I can live with that. I'm okay with that. Since I did that, there's now a marketplace test kit, which is part of Visual Studio in the project menu, and that will let you actually test the app before you ship it. And the nice thing about this is it effectively updates by itself. So if they change the marketplace procedures, which they do over time, then the behavior in Studio will change to keep up with that. So you fire up the test kit, and it will do all kinds of sensible tests, like it'll say, okay, here's your artwork. Have you got your artwork in place? And then it'll go and look at things like, it'll do tests on your ZAP file to make sure that the manifest and the code are consistent. And then it has a list of the itemized manual tests, which you can perform by hand if you like, to check through each of them in turn so that you don't fail when you submit. And I found that very useful. You can also invite up to 100 of your closest friends. A computer scientist with 100 friends, amazing. I digress. You can have a private beta test. When you publish the app, rather than publishing it to everybody, you can publish it to a list of people whose email addresses you put in, and the system will then just email those people and let them have 90 days to play with the app before you push it out for real. Okay, so there's all kinds of nice things you can do. Advertising, yes, you can do that too. You can put adverts in your games. This is my student getting his £3 a day, which he's very pleased with, and the user can touch on the advertisement and then go straight through to either a website or a phone number and call the advertising thing out, and it works quite well, 70%, and a lot of students are doing that now. The Pub Centre is the place you go to for that. Again, the main reason why these slides are here is because all the links are in them for you to follow through, and just coming towards the end now, here are some good resources. XNA is a game framework that runs across all the platforms I mentioned earlier. So there's a very good MSDN site you can go to for stuff. There's also a resource page. A guy called Sean Hargreaves, wrote a very good set of blogs on XNA, which you can take a look at when you get into the techie side. There's also a there's the Farseer on CodePlex, which is kind of cute. That's what we're looking at. So those are all there. If you want to have a phone like mine on your PC, then download the skin switcher. Doesn't actually do anything. Little Watson, if you're shipping a game, manage the process by which errors are reported. Two things you should probably have when you ship a product to marketplace. One is an error reporting mechanism, and the other is a kill switch. The error reporting side of things, basically in the phone, you can pre-populate an email message and then have the user press a button to send it. That is three lines of code. It's very easy. So what you should do is, when your program tips over, it could write a file back into ISOstore. Next time they restart the program, your program checks, is that file there? Oh, got an error log. Sorry, I seem to have fallen over last time. Do you want to report this? And if they just touch yes, that's all they have to do. Everything else then just gets sent back to you, and then you can deal with that. Now, this is really important for two reasons. One is it gives you fantastic telemetry. You can get the stack trace and everything back. Second thing is, you're building a relationship with your users, because when you get that email, you bounce back a response saying, I'm terribly sorry. It won't happen again. It's fixed in version 2. Maybe you won't say that. what you can do is get into a dialogue with them, and then you've got, effectively, not quite a fan base, but you're now working with people who are effectively beta testing it for you. And so getting a policy by which you can get this rapport with users, getting a thing. Now, Little Watson is a play on the Dr. Watson thing. Someone's written a package which you can drop into your XNA game which does this for you, and that's the link through. So they've effectively got the catching and the email and the sending through, and so there's the link to go and have a look. The other thing which I mentioned was the kill switch. There is a problem with the marketplace to do with how it works, which is that if you find an enormous bug that makes your program very hard to use, okay, because your updated version has to go through marketplace approval, it can be 5 days before your fix gets pushed out there, okay? Now, that's 5 days in which your users are going to be falling over this bug and giving you crappy feedback. If you have a bit of code at the start that goes on a web service or a web page or somewhere and just has a look to see if there's a file there or something to make me do something different, then maybe you could change it so that when the program starts up, it goes, hey, we have a known issue with this thing. We're working on it. Please don't use this menu or whatever. Even if you like, make the app shut down if it's not meaningful to continue. But putting it in at the start means that you now have a mechanism by which you can get control at the point at which bad stuff starts to happen. And that's worth doing as well. There's a bunch of resources there. And there's me, robmiles.com. Woo. And I'm also on Twitter as Rob Miles as well. Okay, so that's all good. You could also buy my book. It doesn't come with crayons. it's XNA4, which is the one that's in the phone. It covers phone development. If you know how to program already, I would suggest it may be a bit too simple-minded for you because it's designed to teach programming from first principles. If you've got 12-year-old kids that want to actually have a go at writing code, this ain't a bad place to start. Please, buy my book. I'd like it. Bottom line for me, though, is make stuff and have fun, because this is a... It's all very well having a nice program on your PC at home to show people, but be able to whip this out and go, look, tip the phone, the light changes. Ooh, isn't that good? And they go, yes, very good, Rob. Have a drink. All good. So just think about what you can do. The market for nice ideas, we don't really know what we can use these for yet. There's loads of scope. And for me, it's the daftest ideas that have actually had the most traction, which says something. But it's a great place to hone your skills and show off. And you're in a very familiar place. You're using Studio, you're using C#, you're using all the good stuff. And so, yeah, make stuff and have fun, because that's what I like doing. It's what I do for fun. So there you go. Here's some more links. Everything on AKMS on the start. There's some free dev tools from there. There's some Channel 9 Mango stuff. I should have put the link. If you search for Windows Phone Jumpstart, there's about 14 hours of video. Myself and a guy called Andy Wigley, who's a Microsoft MVP on phone as well, talking about phone development from all kinds of different perspectives, and yes, it's, and lemon drizzle cake and other things. It's very odd, but there, it's all there. So, right, well, I'll leave that. That's more useful. We just have very quick time for any questions, but in the meantime, thank you for being a great audience. Thank you. Any, well, if you have any questions, come down here. If not, then catch the bus.